This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
Good morning and welcome to Perspective with me, Sue Clark. Last night, the Joeys, that is, the Australian under-17s football team, played Laos in the first preliminary qualifying final for the FIFA Under-17 World Championship. They were the first Australian team to compete as a member of the Asian Football Federation. But what does Australia leaving the Oceania Football Federation and joining Asia actually mean? For sport, for business, and politics. With his perspective on football diplomacy, research fellow at the Lowy Institute for International Policy, Anthony Bubalo.
2005 was a gigantic year for football in Australia. That's soccer to the uninitiated. A new domestic competition got underway. Australia found a new home in the Asian Football Confederation. And to cap it all off, Australia won its way to this year's World Cup in Germany for the first time in 32 years. Our performance at the World Cup is unquestionably important to the future of the round ball game in Australia. But our membership of the AFC has the potential to do even greater things for Australia's commercial, political and cultural profile in Asia and beyond. Just consider the size of the sporting confederation of which Australia is now a member. It covers more than half the world's population, stretches from the Persian Gulf to Southeast and North Asia, and contains three of the world's top five economies, Japan, China and India, measured on purchasing power. Consider too that for the first time ever we will have a regular sporting relationship at club and national level with neighbours both immediate and more distant. This year, for example, Australia will play six home and away qualifying matches for the 2007 Asian Cup against the national sides of Lebanon, Bahrain and Kuwait. And qualification for the 2010 World Cup could see us up against teams such as Indonesia, Malaysia, Korea, Japan and China. Undoubtedly, this new sporting relationship involves some potential pitfalls. As George Orwell once wrote of international sport, there cannot be much doubt that the whole thing is bound up with the rise of nationalism, that is, with the lunatic modern habit of identifying oneself with large power units and seeing everything in terms of competitive prestige. But in my view, the opportunities far outweigh the risks. Most obviously, commercial sponsors of Australian national and club sides will now be able to reach a massive new audience. Some 250 million Chinese were, for example, estimated to have watched the 2004 Asian Cup final between China and Japan. And more significant, in my view, is what all this means for Australia's political and cultural ties with Asia. Australia's engagement with Asia is a reality across many fields, from politics and commerce to tourism and education. But a deeper cultural and especially a popular engagement has largely been missing. Many existing linkages are driven by political and business elites. And while there is a long history of interaction by backpackers and students at a more popular level, the relationship has largely been transactional. That is, something is being pursued, such as an exotic holiday or a Western education, emphasising the differences between societies. That is, one lacks what the other has, rather than the common elements. Even our cultural relations programs have tended by and large to focus on the educated and elites among our neighbouring societies. By contrast, sports like football and cricket have mass appeal and provide a common point of conversation between societies. Sporting fans undoubtedly follow their teams passionately, but they also tend to share an appreciation for the game and its players, illustrated by the immense popularity of cricketers Adam Gilchrist and Steve Waugh in India. And just look at what happened during last year's World Club Championships in Japan, when Sydney FC drafted the playing services of Japanese legend Kazu, turning the Sydney-based side into a local crowd favourite. Whether in football stadiums in Asia or Australia, or via media coverage of the sport, or by the exchange of football players between club teams in the region, this new sporting relationship will provide a much broader and more grassroots engagement. At least in policy terms, none of this mattered in the past, because foreign policy and business was largely the preserve of elites. But today that is changing. Public opinion is increasingly a factor in the formulation of foreign policy as regional countries democratize. Moreover, it is the actions of individuals that are increasingly the key to addressing global problems such as terrorism and disease, while national branding has become critical to a state's ability to attract everything from investment to political support. Of course, These opportunities will need to be grasped. In particular, business, government and the Football Federation will all need to work in close coordination to maximise both the football and broader political, cultural and commercial benefits. But there is no doubt in my own mind that with a little bit of application and creativity, Australia's new footballing relationship with Asia can be a winner both on and off the pitch.
Anthony Bubalo from the Lowy Institute for International Policy. And Frank Lowy is the founder and chairman of the Lowy Institute and the chairman of Football Federation Australia. Now, if you'd like to download or even podcast this perspective, well, you can by going to our website. That's at abc.net.au/RN and follow the prompts.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs, more than 260 transmitters Australia-wide. And we're live on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/RN. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/RN/podcast.